So it's the 21st of December. That's the winter solstice. The winter solstice, 2016. And VIHG in Vrindavan. And we're going to be doing all of Canto 3, Chapter 3. So that's text 1 through 28. Everybody ready? Almost ready? Udhava uvacha tata sagyata puram svapitros chikirshaya shambhala deva samyuta nepatya tunga ripu yutanatam atam vacharshadvasamoja. Sri Uddhava said, therefore Lord Krishna went to Mathura's city with Sri Baladev, and to please their parents they dragged Kamsa, the leader of public enemies, down from his throne, killed him, pulling him along the ground with great strength. Sandipane sakrit proktam brahmaicha savishtaram tasmai pradavaram putram mittam pancha janodarat. The Lord learned all the Vedas with their different branches simply by hearing them once from his teacher, Sandipani Muni, whom he rewarded by bringing back his dead son from the region of Yamaloka. Samahita bhijmaka kanyayaye shriya savaye na babushayasham gandharva vritya mishatam swabhagam Jagre Padam Murdni Dadat Suparna. Attracted by the beauty and fortune of Rukmini, the daughter of King Bhijmaka, many great princes and kings assembled to marry her. The Lord Krishna, stepping over the other hopeful candidates, carried her away as his own share, as Garuda carried away nectar. Kakudmino Vidana Sodamitva Swayam vare nagna jitim uvaha tad vadnamanam api gridyatogya jagme kshata shastra vrita swashastray. By subduing seven bulls whose noses were not pierced, the Lord achieved the hand of Princess Nagnajiti in the open competition to select her bridegroom. Although the Lord was victorious, his competitors asked the hand of the princess. Thus there was a fight. Well equipped with weapons, the Lord killed or wounded all of them, but he was not hurt himself. Priyam prabhur gramya iva priyaya vedit suracha jutaram yadarte vajyanam tam sagano mushantam viram nigam namayam vadunam. Just to please his dear wife, the Lord brought back the Parijata tree from heaven.
Yes, as an ordinary husband would do. But
Indra, the king of heaven, induced by his wife, and kept as he was, ran after the Lord with full force to fight. Sutam mrije kam vapushagar santam visvasunabhomatitam daritya amankitastatanayayashesham Tadva Tadanta Puruma Vishesha. Narasura, the son of Daritri, the earth, tried to grasp the whole sky, and for this he was killed by the Lord in a fight.
His mother then prayed to the Lord.
This led to the return of the kingdom to the son of Naragasura, and thus the Lord entered the house of the demon. Tatra Hitastha Nara Deva Kanya Kuyena Drisva Harinaka Bandhum Udaya Sajo Jagurur Prahasha Vrida Nurava Pranita Balokai. There in the house of the demon, all the princesses kidnapped by Narakasura at once became alert upon seeing the Lord, the friend of the distressed. They looked upon him with eagerness, joy, and sadness, and offered to be his wives. Asamuhurta itasmin nanagare shuyoshita Sabiram Jagadamim, Anupasvamayam. All those princesses were lodged in different apartments, and the Lord simultaneously assumed different bodily expansions, exactly matching each and every princess, except to their hands in perfect rituals by his internal potency. Sasyapatya yaya atmatunyani sarvata ekakasyanta sadasa prakriter vibhushaya. Just to expand himself according to his transcendental features, the Lord begot in each and every one of them 10 offspring with exactly his own qualities. Ajikanat swayam divyam swapunsam teja adishat. Kalayavana, the king of Magadha and Shalva, attacked the city of Mathura. But when the city was encircled by their soldiers, the Lord refrained from killing them personally, just to show the power of his own men. Shambaram dvivabhanam muram balbalamevacha anyascha dantavakradin avadichamscha ghayayat. Of kings like Shambara, Dvidvida, Bana, Mura, Balabala, and many other demons such as Dantavakra, some he killed himself, and some he caused to be killed by others, Sri Baladev, etc. Atate Gratu Bhutanam Pakshayo Patitam Lirpan Chachala Bhukru Shecham Ye Shama Patitam Balai. Then, O Vidura, the Lord calls all the kings, both the enemies and those on the side of your fighting nephews, to be killed in the battle of Kurukshetra. All those kings were so great and strong that the earth seemed to shake as they traversed the warfare. Sakarna Dushashana Sobalanam Gumantrakena Hatashriyayusham Suryodhanam Sanucharam Shayanam Bhagmorumukam Nandananda Pashyam. Duryodhana was bereft of his fortune and duration of life because of the intricacy of ill advice given by Karna, Dushashana, and Sobala. When he lay on the ground with his followers, his thighs broken, although he was powerful, the Lord was not happy to see this. Kiyam Kshapitoru Bhavro Yadrona Bhishma Arjuna Bhima Mulai Astadash Kausalpindu Shire Aste Balam Durvishaham Yadunam. After the end of the battle of Kurukshetra, the Lord said, the abatement of the earth's great burden, 18 Akshohinis, has now been effected with the help of Drona, Bhishma, Arjuna, and Bhima. But what is this? There is still the great strength of the Yadu dynasty, born of myself, which may be a more unbearable burden. When they quarrel among themselves, influenced by intoxication, with their eyes red like copper because of drinking madhu, then only will they disappear. Otherwise it will not be possible. My disappearance, this incident will take place. Evam sanchinchya bhagavan swaraje stapya dharmajam nandayam asasurida sarunam vartmadarshaya. Lord Shri Krishna, thus thinking to himself, established Maharaj Yudhisthira in the position of supreme control of the world in order to show the ideal of administration on the path of piety. Uttarayam jita puror vamsa sadhya bhimanyuna sarvai dronyastra sampushta puna gagapata yuta. The embryo of Puru's descendant, begotten by the great hero Abhimanyu in the womb of Uttara, his wife, was burned by the weapon of the son of Drona, but later he was again protected by the Lord. Ayajaya dharma sutam Ashwamedas tribir vibhu so vikshama anjay prakshan reme krishna manuvrata. The Supreme Lord induced the son of Dharma to perform three horse sacrifices while Yudhisthira, following Krishna, the personality of Godhead, protected and enjoyed the earth, assisted by his younger brothers. Bhagavan api vishvatma loka veda pradanuga kamanse shetiva ashakta samkyamashtita. Simultaneously, the personality of God had enjoyed life in the city of Dwarka, strictly in conformity with the Vedic customs of society. He was situated in detachment and knowledge, as enunciated by the Sankhya system of philosophy. Snigdha smita valokena vacha piyusha kalpaya chare trena vadena sri niketana chatmana. He was there in his transcendental body, the residence of the goddess of fortune, with his usual gentle and sweetly smiling face, his neck hanging words and his flawless character. Imam lokam mamun jaya ramayam sutaram yadun Veme shana daya datta shana sweet shana sorudha. The Lord enjoyed his pastimes both in this world and in other worlds, higher planets, specifically in the association of the Yadu dynasty, and leisure hours offered by night, he enjoyed the friendship of conjugal love with women. Tasyaiva mamanasya sambatsara danam bahum grame deshu yogeshu viraga samajayata. The Lord was thus engaged in household life for many, many years, but at last his detachment from ephemeral sex life was fully manifested. Daivadineshu kameshu daivadina swayam puman kovisham veta yogena yogeshwaram manuvrata. Every living entity is controlled by a supernatural force, and thus his sense enjoyment is also under the control of that supernatural force. No one, therefore, can put his faith in Lord Krishna's transcendental sense activities, but one who has become a devotee of the Lord by rendering devotional service. Uyam kadachit kridagir yadu boja kumarakai kopita munaya sepur Bhagavan Mata Kovida. Once upon a time, great sages were made angry by the sporting activities of the princely descendants of the Yadu and Bhoja dynasties, and thus, as desired by the Lord, the sages cursed them. Tata Katipayar Mashayar Vishni Bhojan Dakartaya Yayu Kabasham Samvista Rata Deva Vimohita. A few months passed, and then, bewildered by Krishna, all the descendants of Vishni, Bhoja, and Andaka, who are incarnations of demigods, went to Prabhasa, while those who were eternal devotees of the Lord did not leave but remained in Dwarka. Tatrasnatva purindevam vishnchayvataram saha tarpaitvata vibhrebyo gavo bahu gunadadu. After arriving there, all of them took bath with the water of this place of pilgrimage. They offered their respects to the forefathers, demigods, and great sages, and thus satisfied them. They gave caps to the brahmanas in royal charity. Hiranyam rajatam sayam vasasyagnakam akam janam ratam nivam kanya daram vritti kanimapi. The Brahmins were not only given welfare, cows, and charity, but also gold coins, bedding, clothing, animal skin seats, blankets, horses, elephants, girls, and sufficient land for maintenance. Anam chora samtebhyo tatva bhagavanarpanam govibharta savashudra kanehur bhuvimurdhabhi. Thereafter, they offered the Brahmanas highly delicious foodstuffs, first offered to the personality of Godhead, and offered their respectful obeisances by touching their heads to the ground, aided imperfectly by protecting the cows and rams.
Okay, so right now I'd like just to play a little game. You've all brought your two pieces of paper, yes?
Yes.
And let's start with one of the pastimes from this chapter. So, What I want us to do is the ladies stay with the ladies and gentlemen stay with the gentlemen. So you pick somebody and you ask them one of the questions and see if they can answer it. And if they can't answer it, then ask them another question. And then they ask you their questions, and then after that, you switch and work with someone else. So everybody should work with everybody. So you should have five, you're going to be in five different pairs, six different pairs. So you should, each of the men should ask each of the men their questions and answer the questions of each of the men. Do you understand? Each of the ladies should ask their questions of each of the ladies, pair by pair, and then answer the questions of each of the ladies. Okay, everybody clear about that?
So yes? Just going from this chapter.
We still have to do
it. Oh, we have to stop. We have to. It's 4:10. And
but we didn't do it, everybody.
What am I supposed to do? Okay, well, I hope you like that. Okay. So this chapter is very much about Krishna reciprocating with his devotees. So we're just going to go through the different pastimes here. Obviously briefly, because we're doing a whole chapter in about 40 minutes. So why did Krishna, again, this is mostly about Krishna reciprocating with his devotees. So why did Krishna kill Kamsa? Anybody know from verse 1?
Because Brahma asked him to.
Yes, definitely.
Devaki and
Vasudeva were frightened. Right. So he particularly wanted to show them, don't worry, he's dead. He's dragging him around. Prabhupada said that that Vasudeva and Devaki thought when Krishna jumped up on the throne, what did they think was going
to
happen?
Kamsa.
That Kamsa would kill Krishna.
Yes.
Finally, he would have the opportunity to kill Krishna.
Yes, finally they thought he's going to have the opportunity to kill Krishna.
Although we have taken so much care for him to be protected.
Yeah, they thought we already sent him away from home.
Yeah.
We gave up our own relationship with him, sent him away from home for him to be safe, and now he's jumping right onto Kamsa's throne. Now he's going to be killed by Kamsa. I always find it fascinating how, Vasudeva and Devaki were ordered to take birth on earth to assist with these pastimes. So Lord Vishnu had said, I'm going to come and kill Kamsa, I'm going to come and kill these demons. So in some way, they must have already known that. Then they hear the voice from the sky during the wedding procession that the eighth son will kill Kamsa, and still their mood is fear that Kamsa will kill their son. You know, that's their parental rasa is so much more overpowering than philosophy or logic or anything else. They, you know, I've got to protect my child. 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 You know, I mean, if you think about it, when Krishna appears in the prison, you know, just putting myself in that position. If I was in a kingdom where Kamsa had been persecuting everybody, and I was told that my eighth child would kill Kamsa, and I had been imprisoned, and all of my children were killed in front of my eyes by Kamsa, when Krishna came, I would say to him, great, I'm so glad you're here. Now you can kill Kamsa. That's what I would say. Isn't that what most people would say?
Yeah, yeah.
But their response was just the opposite. Their response was, oh no, now you're here. Kamsa will kill you. Okay. Learning from Sandipani Muni, everything in one day. Did you want to say something on that?
From the other perspective, why after being her children were killed, why she was ready to beget again and again? Because she knows they will be killed.
Why was Devaki willing to have children again and again and again, though she knew that Kamsa would kill them? Any thoughts? why would you keep having children if you knew that somebody was going to murder them?
We are not in Sandipani Muni.
No, we just jumped back. Yes?
Because the arrangement of Krishna,
actually, there were vasus. Lost her completely. What?
The vasus had to take birth as because of the curse. So Devakishi was an instrument in Krishna's hand.
That's a very nice explanation. And in fact, there's a wonderful purport at the end of this chapter in regard to the yadus like that. That the devotee is willing to do anything. And that purport is here. So in the purport to 15, we're still talking about why Devaki was willing to have children that were killed. We haven't jumped to another topic yet, but we're comparing it. Poor Mahalakshmi is so confused. We're comparing this to the Yadus. What Krishna Kirtan said is that the devotees are willing to do anything to please Krishna. And so this is discussed in the purport of text 15. Where it says, the devotees and associates of the Lord are completely surrendered souls. Thus they are transcendental instruments in the hand of the Lord and can be used in any way the Lord desires. The pure devotees also enjoy such pastimes of the Lord because they want to see Him happy. So if Devaki's service was to be used to liberate these children from their curse, from having laughed at Lord Brahma, she was willing to do that. She was willing to be the instrument. I mean, it's just extraordinary. You know, we would like to do glorious service. Right? At least just speaking for myself. You know, I want to do glorious service that's fun and happy and that everybody praises me for it. I want to do that kind of service. I don't want to do a service that where I'm suffering and I'm miserable and everybody criticizes me for. But the pure devotees who have love, they don't care about that. If their service involves something that's materially happy, or their service involves something that's materially miserable, it doesn't make any difference to them at all. Either on the bodily or the mental platform. Having all your children killed in front of you would be miserable both physically and mentally. Yeah. But they don't care. I mean, the devotees, even the yadus who are killed, you know, that's criticizable that you drink so much that you kill your family members in a drunken rage. Yeah. But they don't care. If that's how Krishna wants them to die, that's how Krishna wants them to die. They're fine with that. I mean, to me, Yudhisthira gambling. Yudhisthira is setting a bad example. But he's okay with that. Okay, whatever Krishna wants me to do. So that's certainly one reason.
But he didn't want to say the lie. He didn't want to say that Ashvatthama is dead. Sorry.
All right. Then he also shows that is a bad example. Because do you think Yudhisthira is really attached to dharma and karma more than Krishna?
No.
No.
Could I want to show a lesson through him?
It's a lesson that even Yudhisthira can have this problem. So you should be careful.
Even gopis didn't care.
Yes, well, the gopis are extreme examples. They're very extreme examples. I mean, the gopis were, you know, they were willing to be completely censured and rejected by society. I think in, you know, our modern day, it's hard to understand really what kind of a sacrifice they were making. But for me, it's also a practical thing with Devaki. If the prophecy is your eighth child is going to kill Kamsa, then you're going to have eight children. whether they get killed by Kamsa or not, you know, you're going to have eight children because it's your duty to produce this child that's going to kill Krishna and kill Kamsa, and somehow you have to have eight of them. Of course, she had another one later. She had Subhadra later in Dwarka. So she had actually at least nine children. But that was the prophecy.
But I am asking because every time she remembers that the eight children will be killing Kamsa. But when the eighth child happens, she forgets that.
He says every time she's remembering the eighth child will kill Kamsa, the eighth child will kill Kamsa, but then when actually the eighth child comes, she forgets about it. And she thinks, oh, Kamsa will kill him.
It's prema.
That she's just becomes overwhelmed with love, with so much love, that...
She's scared.
That she's scared. And Vasudeva also, both of them. That they're overcome with so much love. I don't like that painting where Krishna returns Devaki's six sons and Vasudeva's just standing on the side, detached. It's in Mayapur when you circumambulate Radha Madhava.
Yeah,
and Vasudeva's just kind of standing there, just looking at Devaki. Come on, he's the father. You know, fathers are not just... Oh, there's my kids.
It's an extraordinary event as well.
I don't know, no matter how extraordinary it was, I'm sure that Vasudeva also had some feeling for these children. So, you know, he's not just, oh, that's interesting. I don't think so. But, yeah, she forgot. She was so overwhelmed with love for Krishna that she just forgot the political situation and everything. All she cared about was taking care of him. Vasudeva also, both of them. You don't find either one of them asking Krishna, you know, hey, kill Kamsa first, get us out of prison. Wouldn't you have asked for that? I mean, I would. I'd say, oh, good, you're here, God, finally. You took an awfully long time. You get us out of prison and kill this guy? And do the prophecy? And that wasn't their response at all. So even when Krishna comes to Mathura and he jumps on the throne, their feeling is, oh no, now Kamsa is finally going to kill him. Okay, now let's go to Sandipani Muni. Anything else with Kamsa before we go to Sandipani Muni? So he learned everything in one day. Each subject he learned in one day. Very good student.
And now he was expert.
He was expert.
64 hours.
In 64 days. Not like when we go to school and they're teaching us the same thing every year. You notice that?
Yeah.
Every year. I could never understand that when I went to school. I said, why are you teaching? I said, you taught me this last year. Why are you teaching me again? I said, are you a bad teacher? Am I a bad student? You know, what's the problem here? Now, I remember, you know, I was learning American history every year. From when I was 6 until I was 16. Same stuff.
These students were well acquainted with the subject, so it was completed.
Yeah, well, because they were actually the authors of the subject.
How different, because we can keep on studying the same story and don't get tired.
Yes, yes. Okay, then he brought back the teacher's son from Yamaraj. So in the second purport, Prabhupada talks about how Krishna is grateful. Yes?
I actually listed down all the subjects just for fun.
You listed all the subjects?
Yes, me too.
From Krishna book.
You also did?
Yes.
Oh, you want to read them?
No.
No, we want to read
them. I just wanted to see the pattern in which they are taught, so like elementary school in that way. So first things were related to soundness, like... water pots, dramas, meters, songs.
Oh, you analyzed it.
Then they go to writing dramas.
You classified each.
I'm really impressed. I'm not easily impressed with things like that. I'm really impressed.
So, even though they're Kshatriya students, they are not immediately taught. So after this, drama, then comes magic. Arts, it's arts and arts. Then little bit medicine, little bit cryptographic literature, all these things comes, and little bit of hypnosis and fighting, but basically it's arts and arts. That was something different. And it's not too much. Astrology was not there.
Astrology was not there.
Palmistry was not there.
But they learned how to build bridges.
Yeah,
I remember that.
And they taught it all 64 topics they are taught.
Yes, but he's saying they didn't learn astrology and palmistry. That's interesting.
That's
but they could read minds.
Yeah, but it was amazing. It was
they could talk to birds.
How to wash hair and dye it, and I was surprised. How to wash Kshatriya voice will be taught, how to wash.
How to wash and dye hair.
And curl
how to set and dye and curl hair. It is definitely surprising. Yes, white Kshatriya boys were taught that. Whenever anybody says, oh, we have a real Gurukula, I always say, unless you're teaching how to make flower airplanes, it's not a real Gurukula.
And splash water in rivers. I was like, why would somebody think how to splash water while playing in river?
Like
there must be an art to it.
This is
or the syringe, yeah, but there must be a particular art. And then they learned how to play music underwater. Do they learn how to play music underwater? I know they learned how to play music on containers filled with water. But did they also learn how to play music underwater? I think. Not there. And they learned how to make flower airplanes.
Yeah.
I mean, some of these seem extremely practical and some of them seem rather frivolous. And some rather odd, like how to have cockfights, you know, which is now illegal. Rooster fights. Remember where roosters are?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, okay, there you go.
Well, not so, rooster, but cockfights. Yeah.
Cock, rooster, same thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is illegal in most of the world to have animal fights.
No bullfighting.
Yeah, but they don't have the bulls fight with each other.
No.
But to have animals fight with each other is illegal in most of the world today.
And one was question and answering using poetry. So they asked question and answer.
Answer using poetry.
And what was it so very interesting is the Kshatriya training they received. Because there was a question yesterday about the Kshatriya, and I noted military science, politics and ethics, how to make peace, how to fight, how to pacify, how to divide and rule, and how to give shelter.
Yes.
The arts of the Kshatriya. They have special training in this.
Which I'm sure would have been different for the Brahmin children. But yeah, you do wonder why Kshatriya boys would be washing, dyeing, and curling hair.
Yeah.
They have more than one queen, so
they have more than one queen.
Now, even for your one wife, have you ever washed her hair?
It's for
what to speak of dyed it and curled it?
It's for disguise. So you
it's for the...
Oh, I think you're right.
For disguise.
Yeah.
Disguise.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right. It's so they could be disguised. That's very smart. I never thought about that. I always read that and thought, wow. Why are Krishna and Balaram learning how to dye and curl hair? But yeah, you're right.
Well, I thought for war.
Oh, so you look pretty when you go out to fight the war?
They put all these jewels and these crowns.
Oh my
so
God.
They have to curly hair.
What a female view of this whole thing. They have to wash and dye and curl their hair before they go out and fight so they look pretty. No, I think you're right. It's for like doing spying activities.
Kshatriyas are not just taught politics and warfare, they are also taught the softer side so that they can relate softly to the people. But they are just taught like Spartan kings and everything, war and military. The soft side is evaded and there are three things, culture, devotion and military science. So the culture of soft side has to be taught to boys, otherwise they are untrained and then they become ruthless.
I am knocked over impressed.
Now the point is,
I have never, since I joined the Hare Krishna movement, ever heard anybody analyze the 64 arts like that. Never. I've never even heard anybody try to. Would you write something on this? please?
Yeah.
This is revolutionary, isn't it?
Then the poem can be explained in this way.
What's that?
Khatriya poets are not only will be warriors, but they will occupy the administrative post in which they are expected to remain tip-top with black hair.
Yeah, but they have servants. They have servants. I mean, like when Devahuti married Kardama Muni, she didn't even know how to comb her own hair. You know, it's not that her hair was matted because she was so busy. It's that she just didn't know how. She'd been, you know, she was a princess. And someone else had combed her hair and dressed her and bathed her. She didn't know how to take a bath. So when she was married to Kardama, she was dirty. Her hair was matted and she was dirty. I'm sure she bathed. I'm sure she didn't go all those years without bathing. But she didn't really know how to bathe. I mean, it's something like when I grew up with servants and I didn't know how to clean. You know, I married a man who had been a Navy lieutenant, so he learned how to clean in the Navy and he taught me how to clean. He was amazed that I didn't know how to clean. I didn't know how to do laundry. You know, I got married, I didn't know how to do laundry, I didn't know how to clean. I knew how to cook. I had been a professional cook, but I didn't know how to clean or do laundry. I remember ruining saris because I washed them with bleach and things. I just didn't know. So if you, your whole life, just like with the deity, you know, we bathe the deity, we dress the deity, that was the kind of thing that was done for royalty. For royalty, someone else gives you a bath. It's like even now in India, many men go to a barber to get their face shaved. So if your whole life someone else is shaving your face for you, and someone else is bathing you, and someone else is combing your hair, and someone else is dressing you, you might not know how to do it. So I don't think for Krishna and Balaram they had to wash and curl their own hair. Even in Vrindavan they were princes. But I think this idea for disguise is a fact. You know, if you're gonna go checking on your on the citizens. Huh?
There were more than 100 servants for Krishna only.
Exactly.
For different aspects.
Exactly. So he didn't have to curl his own hair. So he would look nice. He had plenty of servants. But I think, you know, if you're out and about, if you're out spying on the citizens, and all of a sudden you have to quickly run in someplace and dye your hair, and
you have to know how to do it. You don't want anybody to know what you're doing.
Yes, yes, yes. Don't they have that? I'm trying to remember like the old spy movies I used to watch, and the, you know, someone's chasing the guy and he runs in someplace and quickly dyes his hair. Yeah.
Just like the last time the Mahabharata. And Arjuna was to come back to Hastinapura, we see some of the principles being applied the last time on the Asa.
Well, especially when they were in disguise, right? The kingdom of Virat, yeah.
Didn't Krishna already have curly hair? Why did he need to curl his hair?
Why did Krishna need to curl his hair? Do you know, even if you have curly hair, you may need to arrange the curls.
Yeah.
But you may want to know how to set your hair so it looks differently than it normally does. I don't think curl hair just means to curl it. It means to set it, to change its look. So to wash it, to change its color, to change its look. Please write something on this. This is exciting. This is one of the most exciting things I've heard for a long time. That we could take those 64 arts and actually analyze them in terms of practical varna. I'd always looked at them and said, what?
And how are we going to get it if he writes it? How are we
going to
know if he has writing?
Email is fine. We'll try to publish it.
Okay.
Yes.
That's why I'm asking.
Yeah, yeah. I'm asking him to write it. We'll try to publish it. Maybe we can get it published in Back to Godhead or at least on Dandavas. That's easier. All right. Going on. Bringing back Sani Pani Muni's son from Yamaraj. I'm really just so excited about this. I'm glad you came, and I'm glad I taught the class just for that.
Even this Sandipuri pastime happened in Pravashetra.
Happened what?
In Pravashetra.
In Pravashetra.
Wasn't it, that's, wasn't
bringing
it?
Bringing back the sun happened in Prabhashri.
Same place where the Yadus killed themselves.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
And I thought it was in another place, the school of Sandipani.
Yeah, the school's in another place, but bringing, the school's in Ujjain.
Avantipur.
Avantipur.
But bringing back, he said, bringing back the sun, the dead sun happened at Prabhas.
Okay.
So Prabhupada makes the point that Krishna is grateful. If you're, if you're Krishna's teacher, that he's grateful. By the way, to be grateful, you have to be humble. Proud people can't be grateful. And how interesting that God, who deserves to be given everything, doesn't have a mood that I deserve to be given everything. That's not his mood. His mood is not, of course, I'm God. You're supposed to be my teacher. And you should just feel privileged that I came to be your student. But he feels grateful. Which is pretty astonishing that he's God, but he's humble.
He is grateful on the plea. He was knowing his supreme personality of Godhead. So much so, his mother and his daughter, they are in the service of the Lord.
Mm. Yes.
Purnamasi and his granddaughter.
And that only Krishna could bring back a dead son from Yamaraj. This is some proof.
Yes.
Proof that he's God. Prabhupada in 26th purport, he said that everyone should be grateful and repay their debts. We should all have it. It's one of the items of knowledge is gratitude. And it's basically, I see, without gratitude, there's no such thing as love, there's no such thing as humility. It's one of the prime markers of humility. Humility isn't just going around talking about how fallen you are. But it's appreciating what other people do for you. And appreciating what other people do in general. Okay. Killing Narakasura, giving the kingdom to his son Bhagadatta. I really liked in text 8 where it talks about in the verse and in the purport how Krishna took different forms to match each of the queens.
Yeah.
So that aspect of Krishna has always really delighted me, that Krishna appears somewhat differently to each devotee. All right, then we have kidnapping Rukmini. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary to verse 3 says, all the kings thought that Rukmini would marry them. Which I think is fascinating because they went there to see her get married to Shishupal. So how could they possibly think that she was going to marry them?
Because she's the goddess of fortune.
Because they were just so lusty, basically. I mean, it's interesting, you know, just like Vasudeva and Devaki are thinking that Kamsa's going to kill Krishna out of love. So the kings are all hoping Krishna's going to marry, Rukmini's going to marry them out of lust. Just like lust blinds our intelligence. You understand? They're so blinded by their lust on seeing Rukmini, they imagine, oh, she'll abandon Shishupal and marry me.
Like Mohini.
Huh? Like Mohini. Yeah, but in this case, it's Rukmini's wedding. I mean, could you imagine being invited to your friend's wedding and hoping that his bride is going to marry you instead? You know, that's a little outrageous. Isn't it? Maybe when she sees me here at the wedding ceremony, she'll abandon her groom and marry me.
I mean, that might be a little bit more possible if it was just an arranged marriage.
No, it could be, which it was.
Yeah.
So they were hoping maybe she would change her mind when they actually when she saw them.
Yeah.
Still, it was pretty funny. It said, and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur said, although they were afraid of Krishna, so they were looking around, is Rukmini going to pick me, and then what's Krishna going to do? And then defeating the 7 bulls to marry Nagnajiti. So this pen out here is all bulls. You've all noticed that? This is the bull pen. Outside? Those are all bulls out there.
Ah, yeah.
You've all noticed that, yes?
Sure.
Yes. So these seven bulls didn't have any ring in their nose, and they were very angry bulls, but still Krishna subdued them and didn't get hurt.
What does having a ring in their nose?
It's much easier to control them if they have a ring in their nose. That's how bulls are controlled. Just like the way they control horses is they put a bit in their mouth. So the way you control a bull is you put a ring in his nose and you train him like that. So when you pull on the ring a little this way and that way, then he moves.
And it's painful. They are forced to follow.
Yeah.
Even to put the ring, it takes a lot of courage. So if you're not able to put the ring, that means the bull is very, very angry. So control is second part. That's the purpose of it. But if this bull is not rope, that means it's beyond the control of anyone.
Well, I'm sure they do it when they're very young.
Babies, yeah.
Yeah.
We did it there.
Yeah, I'm sure they do it when they're very young. And little bull babies are not wild. Not usually. I've taken care of little baby bulls. And, you know, babies are babies. They're just babies.
Even the bulls of the devotees, they are so nice.
Generally.
Nicer than cows. Yes, we have.
Well, we see, I mean, when you walk around the streets here in Vrindavan, there's a lot of bulls because the people who take care of cows, they don't want to take care of the males. But a lot of them don't want to kill the males, so they just let them out loose. And it's one reason that a lot of the animals you see walking around are bulls. And most of them are pretty peaceful. Most of the bulls are yeah, you're right, they're very peaceful. They're just standing at the side of the road.
The fighting bulls, they are mistreated heavily.
Yes.
And why they come out so crazy.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that even the bulls here can be pretty aggressive under certain circumstances. But generally, they just seem to be extremely peaceful. It was also interesting that after Krishna had won Nagnajiti, that the other princes still attacked Krishna. And so Krishna ended up wounding and even killing some of them. And we find this is a typical materialistic mentality, not accepting that I've been defeated. You know, oops, continuing to fight even after I've been defeated. It's not.
That's Swayambhu, so I get the princes of their time.
They didn't, it wasn't that they generally died. I mean, I can't imagine that the princes and kings would go to win a princess and they all die. I mean, that would explain why there could be a lot of polygamy, because all the guys died at the Swayambhus. So I mean, you sometimes wonder, how did these guys have like 300 wives? Where did where did all these girls come from? You know, were most of the kings having, you know, 30 girls and 2 boys as children? But no, they didn't generally die at the swine bar. Usually if you were defeated, you just went home.
Not all of them.
No, sometimes they died.
Even in Swayambhu Amba, the king went back to Bhishma. In the Swayambhu Amba, like where Shiva kidnapped the king of Swarashtra, he went to fight Bhishma, knowing that he will lose, but still.
Yeah, well, you know.
Let's give it a try.
What to say? Men and women each have their craziness, and that's the craziness of men. I mean, even in the animal kingdom, the males will sometimes fight to the death over a female. Generally, though, they don't kill each other. Generally, in the animal kingdom, the way the males fight for a female is mostly symbolic. They don't usually hurt each other that severely. Sometimes one of the animals is severely wounded and sometimes mortally wounded, but not generally. Yeah, but most of the time, when the males are fighting over the females, they don't mortally wound each other. Generally, one of the males just backs off and says, okay, you can have her. So I would imagine most of the times the kings and princes are not willing to die for a woman. Also, she's probably not their only woman. They probably have another one at home already. So it would make a lot of widows, too, you know. If you just kind of think about these things from a practical perspective. And how would you feel, you know, if your husband died trying to get a second or third or fourth wife? You know, that wouldn't be a very happy thing. How did you become a widow? Oh, you know, my husband died over a Swayamvara for wife number 10. You know? But definitely some of these guys have big egos and they can't, you know. That's sort of the hallmark of the Kshatriya. They have these big egos.
Kshatriya,
one of
the strongest men
would be the son-in-law. Yeah, definitely. Then we have taking the Parijata tree from heaven for Satyabhama. So, Prabhupada makes the point in the purport of 5 that Indra was actually henpecked. And Krishna was not. Although from Indra's perspective, he thought that Krishna was. He thought, oh, Krishna's like me. So we tend to think that Krishna's like me. And Prabhupada's saying that Krishna is reciprocating with Satyabhama's love. So what's the difference between a man being henpecked and Krishna reciprocating with Satyabhama's love?
Because the man is control and Krishna was not. He was reciprocating.
So why are the men controlled?
Because they are attached.
Why?
Because of lust. Attached.
Because of lust. Yeah. Both gross and subtle. So they're thinking, without this woman, if this woman doesn't like me, if she's not happy with me, then I'm not going to get gross sexual satisfaction. She'll just say, no, I don't want anything to do with you. You're useless. You gave away the Parijata tree. And then they won't get subtle satisfaction. The woman won't say, oh, you're a great hero, right? You're wonderful. You're amazing. She'll say, what's wrong with you? Letting Krishna take the Parijata tree, you know, you're useless. And the man is dependent on the woman to feel happy. Without the woman satisfying him grossly and subtly, then he doesn't feel that he's happy. But Krishna doesn't need anybody satisfying grossly and subtly to be happy.
He's Atmarama.
He's satisfied in himself. I mean, this is the problem with material sense gratification. We're dependent on other things and other people for us to feel happy. That's why we get angry at other people. If they don't act in a way to make us happy, then we're angry. Because we think, if they don't act in such and such a way, I can't be happy. But Krishna's not like that. He's already happy. He doesn't need Satyabhama to behave with him in any particular way for him to be happy.
So he reciprocates to her love.
Just the fact that she loves him, that she wants him to be happy, so therefore he wants her to be happy. And that's the kind of relationships we wish we had.
Yeah.
That's the kind of relationships we want. We want a relationship with people who want us to be happy. Just because they want us to be happy. Not because by making us happy, we'll do something for them. You understand? Generally, people want me to be happy, so I'll give them something. And I want them to be happy, so they'll give me something. Or not give me something, perhaps. You understand? So usually I'm trying to please people because I think I need something from them. I need them to do something or not to do something. And if they're happy with me, they'll treat me the way that I want. They'll give me what I want. But love means I want the other person to be happy just because I want them to be happy. Selfless. I don't want anything from them. I just simply want them to be happy because I want them to be happy. We see this in this world sometimes. I think, you know, Prabhupada talked about seeing it mostly in the parental relationship. And I think we see it mostly in the parental relationship because we see the child as an extension of ourself. So I want me to be happy. So if the child is part of me, I want the child to be happy just for the child to be happy. Whether the child does anything for me in return is irrelevant. Their happiness is enough reward for me. So we sometimes see this in other relationships. We sometimes see it in romantic relationships and friendly relationships and servant-master. We see it sometimes in other relationships also, but it's most often seen in the parental relationship because that's where we most strongly feel that this other being is part of me and therefore their happiness and my happiness are one. Right? So for Krishna, he's happy, you know, he wants to make Satyabhama happy and she wants to make him happy. He doesn't want to make her happy so she'll give him something. He doesn't need anything from her at all. And she doesn't want to make him happy so he'll give her something. I mean, I want to please Krishna because I want Krishna to do things for me. You understand? You know, I want Krishna to give me money, I want Krishna to give me health, I want Krishna to give me a happy family, I want Krishna to give me a good reputation, I want Krishna to give me so many things. So I want to make Krishna happy because I have a whole list. Like it's about almost Christmas time, people go to Santa Claus with a list, in America at least. This is what I want for Christmas. So we go to God with a list. But that's not love, that's business. Right? Krishna, please be happy with me so that I can get all these things. So Indra thought that Krishna was like him because Indra wants to please his wives so he'll get something from them, gross and subtle. And he thought, oh, Krishna's like that too. All right, rescuing the 16,000 queens. So in purport 7, says that they would have had difficulty finding any other husband once they had been kidnapped.
What are we?
We are in verse 7. But I'm not necessarily going in order. I organize the class thematically, not in order. So I'm not teaching the chapter in order. What I do is I go through the section and then I organize it thematically. Which may go in order. This time I'm more or less going in order, but I don't necessarily. So they would have had difficulty, and I like the fact that it says they had eagerness, joy, and shyness on seeing the Lord.
Yes, I have written that.
Isn't that nice? That's so sweet. That's so sweet.
And the same comes in the verse, in the chapter of Denukasura. It also describes the glances.
Very sweet.
Different way,
and then Krishna had 10 offspring like himself from each queen. He gave conjugal pleasure to his queens. And he lived as an ideal householder in Dwarka. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's comment on text 21. He says, this verse explains that though the Lord is not attracted to the actions of Maya Shakti, he is attached to the actions of the Chit Shakti. By sweetness of four elements, glances, words, actions, and form, the Lord gave pleasure to the devotees on earth and on heaven, especially with the Yadus. But among the Yadus, he enjoyed especially with the women. This shows greater and greater attachment. Showing attraction through a festival of conjugal actions for these women at suitable opportunities during the night, he enjoyed. This is because the queens were actually composed of his chit shakti, arising from his swarup. So the queens are not some materialistic women looking for some kind of physical, you know, gross sensory pleasure from God. They're wanting to love the Lord in this way, and the Lord is giving them pleasure in the way that they want to serve him. So in Dwarka, Krishna showed knowledge and renunciation in fleeing the battlefield, in killing demons like Shalva, Sambara, Dvidvita, Bana, Mura, Balvala, and many other demons such as Dantavakra. And specifically, he had other people kill some demons, which mentioned here is Balaram, Muchukunda killing
Bhima
killing Jarasandha, Muchukunda killing Kalyavana, and Baladev also killing Dvidvita and other demons. Yes. So why does Krishna do that? Why doesn't he kill them all himself?
To give the praise to his devotees.
This is also, again, we often see this in a particularly in a parental mood, that parents like their children to be glorified more than themselves. So in communities where there's a lot of children, the children will come up and do presentations, which frankly are not terribly interesting. Yes? And we are going to talk about Ramachandra and Sita today. You know, and they're not very well done often. And, you know, they're not terribly interesting. So the parents could certainly, we hope, do a much better presentation than the children. But the parents like watching the children do these not very interesting presentations. And, you know, when I visit different temples, sometimes they have the children do a presentation and they really want me particularly to watch it.
It's for the benefit of the child.
Yes, it often is quite painful. But the parents and the community who know the children, they're very happy. It gives them a lot of pleasure. So Krishna likes to have his devotees do things rather than himself always doing things. I really like text 13, that Krishna also loved Duryodhan, so he was not pleased to have him punished. Of course, he particularly loved, what form of Krishna particularly loved Duryodhan? Which form of the Lord?
Which form of the Lord did Duryodhan
love? And who loved Duryodhan?
Balaram.
Ah, yeah.
So it's interesting that as Krishna, the Lord is loving Arjuna, and as Balaram, the Lord is loving Duryodhan, but the Lord loves everyone, and the Lord doesn't like punishing. We should never, ever, 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 ever think that the Lord wants us to suffer. He does not want us to suffer. And if we could learn what we need to learn and do what we need to do without suffering, he would prefer that. Krishna will never, ever, ever prefer to have somebody suffer. If we are suffering, it is never that Krishna says, all right, the way I'm going to purify this person is through suffering. He always tries a non-suffering way first. If we are suffering, it's our own fault. And this is, it's very interesting because just today, I had this one devotee on Facebook who was writing me between 5 to 20 messages a day. Long, 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 long messages. And the first time he wrote me, I thought he asked me an honest question, and so I answered it. But I didn't give him the answer he wanted. And so then he wrote me message after message criticizing the answer that I gave him. And so I tried to tell him, please, you know, I just don't have time to read all of this. Can you write me less frequently? He wouldn't do it. So then I tried just ignoring everything that he wrote me. But that requires time to ignore somebody's messages. You know what I'm saying? You have to either show that you've read them and then they think that you've read them. And I thought, okay, that's not very good. Or you have to at least swipe them off your phone. You know, your phone's always blinking that here's a message and you've got to swipe it off your phone all the time. And then you think, oh, it won't bother me at least for another hour. And then you're swiping some more and it's just constant. And so finally today I wrote to him and I said, look, Prabhu, you know, everything you're writing me is important, but I just don't have the time to read it. And can you please just send me one message a month? One message a month of 5 to 10 sentences. And I tried to be very polite. And he said, okay. I said, I hope you find other people to discuss these things with. And he says, well, we should hear and chant about Krishna. I said, well, yes, I'm doing that, Prabhu, but I really just don't have time to go through all these. I hope you find someone else to discuss this with. Hari Bol, I expect to hear from you again the end of January. And he says, I wish the same for you, Hari Bol. And I think, oh, maybe this guy's not going to keep messaging me so many times a day. And then he sent me another message, criticizing me. So, okay, I've got to block the guy. I just can't have this in my life. But it was with sadness, you understand? I was sad. I didn't want to treat somebody like that. And I was feeling sad. And then reading this, I thought, that's how Krishna feels. He feels sad. He's telling us nicely over and over and over and over and over again, please behave like this, please don't behave like this, please behave like this, please don't behave like this. And we don't listen. And finally he has to get heavy with us, but he doesn't like it. It's not that he likes it. It's a sad thing for him that we're suffering. Last thing here is removing the yadus from the earth. So I'm definitely missing a page here. So this is very nice in the purport to text 14. Prabhupada writes, Śrīla Viṣṇu Chakravarti describes the burden of love very practically. He says that the burden of the husband on the young wife, the burden of the child on the lap of the mother, the burden of wealth on the businessman, although actually burdens from the viewpoint of heaviness, are sources of pleasure. And in the absence of such burdensome objects, one may feel the burden of separation, which is heavier to bear than the burden of love.
Which verse is this?
That's 14. And also, Krishna was thinking that anyone, and I've missed this page, somehow it didn't get printed. The last page of my notes here. But Krishna was thinking, if anyone fights with the Yadu dynasty, they won't win. Like we know, Krishna gets in these battles, and Krishna and his soldiers, none of them get hurt. Was he thinking, no one's going to win, and even if the Yadus fight among themselves, they won't be able to kill each other. And he thinks, the only way it's going to happen is by the curse of a Brahmana, that I'm going to get the Yadus off the earth. So some very, very important points here, that even if you're a Yadu, you can't defend the Brahmanas. You know, that no matter who you are, you shouldn't defend the devotees, you shouldn't defend the Brahmanas. That one should be very careful in one's dealings with everybody. You know, it's risky if we say, well, you know, here's a devotee, I'm going to be nice to them, and here's a non-devotee, I'm not going to be nice to them. Because just like Dhruva's mother, Dhruva's stepmother, when she offended Dhruva, he wasn't yet a devotee. But he became a devotee. So we should be very careful not to offend anyone. Yes?
In one purport, Prabhupada says that only the mixed siddhas went to the Prabhashekha.
Yeah, and it's interesting because that isn't in the verse. And that Krishna's direct associates just mystically went back to his abode rather than being killed like that. There's also, as we go through later on, oh no, here's that paper. Aha, just separated. So give me like another 2 minutes. I know it's already 5:05. Just want to do a couple more things here. Sorry that this paper got separated. We'll discuss that. And so I don't want to discuss it today. We'll be discussing that tomorrow. This concept that the demigods merged into the bodies of the Nityasiddha devotees, that some of the Lord's associates were demigods, some were Nityasiddha's devotees, and in some cases the demigods merged with the Nityasiddha. Just a couple more points here that I want to go over. I'm sorry it's late. Establishing Yudhisthira as king, because this is another lila that's discussed here. And I like that Prabhupada says the Brahmanas are not paid servants. I don't know what verse that is. The Brahmanas are not paid servants, but the government and the merchants take care of them. So what I see often in ISKCON is saying that Brahmanas shouldn't get a salary, but then there's no way that they're getting taken care of. So this is a problem with taking one piece out of a culture without the whole piece. So if you're in a society where the government gives charity to the Brahmanas and the merchants give charity to the Brahmanas, then the Brahmanas don't need to get paid. And I've talked to, you know, a few leaders in ISKCON, and I said, if we encourage people who come to the temple not just to give donations to the deities, but also to give donations to the pujaris, You understand?
Yeah.
That wouldn't be a problem. But if people come to the temple and they're encouraged just to give all the donations to the temple and not to the devotees, and then the temple doesn't want to maintain the devotees, how are they going to be maintained? So if we have a system where everybody just gives donations to the temple, then the temple has to maintain the pujaris and the brahmanas. And if we don't like that, then we have to institute the other system. What's nice about the other system where you don't get a salary is you're just dependent on whatever donations people happen to give. And it helps you be dependent on the Lord. The problem with that also in modern society is even brahmanas tend to have houses that require rent or mortgage. They tend to have fixed expenses. So if you lived in a little hut outside and you had no fixed expenses, then if you didn't get as much money, you just couldn't spend as much money. But when you're in a situation where you have fixed expenses and you don't have a fixed salary, it's hard to live without anxiety.
But in the Gurukul, Prabhupada wanted to support
the school. He actually wanted different things at different times. So if you read different letters at different points in ISKCON history, you'll see contradictory. Contradictory. In the early days of ISKCON, Prabhupada said the parents should work for the temple, the temple should pay the Gurukul fees. Then you read later on, Prabhupada said the parents should pay the Gurukul fees, otherwise it was illicit sex if they don't want to maintain their children. But it was a different time in ISKCON history. Okay, then saving Prickett in the womb. I thought it was interesting that in text 17, Prabhupada said that the Lord was both inside and outside of Uttara's womb simultaneously. A little note about saints and demons. So association. That Narakasura is the son of Varaha and Bhumi, but he became a demon in association with Vanasura. And that Bhu is an expansion of Satyabhama. So this concept that even if you're a devotee, even if you're the son of God, you can become contaminated. Even if you're a yadu, you can be cursed by brahmanas. Even if you're the son of God, you can become a demon with bad association. And then Prabhupada talks in a purport about overpopulation. And he says there can never be too many people, but there can be too many wicked people. Right? So we wouldn't complain if there's 5,000 students here who are all good students. But two students causing a disturbance is too many. If you had two students and they're throwing around the chairs, you know, that's not going to work.